From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, a science show with Cliff Pickover, the physics book. We're going to talk about the Big Bang to quantum resurrection. Looking forward to that. Here's what's happening. Well, if you happen to have Smucker's peanut butter, hold on here. They're recalling some 16-ounce jars of the natural peanut butter chunky sold in several states all over the place because of possible salmonella contamination. The Ohio-based company says the jars covered in the recall would have been purchased in the last week or so, with the best if used by dates. Here you go, August 3rd, 2012 through August 4th, 2012. And they've got production codes on it. I'm going to read them out to you. You might not remember them. 130704 and 130800 4. Salmonella is bacteria resulting in fever, cramps, and all kinds of things, and lasts for several days, can require hospitalization. So there we go, another recall there. An incredible story from Asheville, North Carolina, on its way to New York. Listen to this. There's a pilot and a co-pilot. The pilot decides to leave the cockpit before landing. No big deal. He's going to be right back, right? They lock the door. That's a requirement. All of a sudden, the co-pilot, 5-10 minutes later, hears a knocking on the door, somebody wants to be let in, a man with a thick accent saying, "I have the password," which you need in order to get in that door. They're not going to open the door unless you have the password. He had the password. The co-pilot is freaking out. He calls air traffic control and says, "I have no idea where the pilot is. There's a guy with a thick accent smacking down on the cockpit door, wants in. I'm not going to open it." The tower says, "You better land right now." And they do. It was an incredible terror scare. They truly thought the plane was being hijacked, that something was going on. What happened was that the pilot went to the bathroom and the latch broke. He couldn't get it open. He's slamming on the door. The poor guy with the heavy accent is sitting in the front row. He hears the door being slammed on, goes to it. The pilot says, "Tell everybody I'm stuck in the bathroom. They won't believe you unless you have the password. Here it is." It was a mess, a disaster. Everybody's okay. After reviewing the death of famed actress Natalie Wood Wagner in 1981, the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department ruled it was accidental. But now authorities are reopening the case. They're going to have a major news conference Friday morning about this. They say that they have new information about the Natalie Wood Wagner drowning. I'm not going to say exactly what it is, but TMZ is reporting tonight that a lot has to do with the captain of the boat that they were all on, Natalie Wood, Robert Wagner, Christopher Walken, on that day, on that night, and that the captain has said some things, so we shall see. The actress drowned almost 30 years ago, if you can believe that. 30 years ago. As we reported last night on Coast to Coast, House lawmakers have easily approved legislation that would require states to observe concealed weapons permits issued by other states in a victory for Second Amendment champions in Congress. Of course, it's got to pass through the Senate and everything else. John Lott, Professor John Lott, with us. John, what do you think of this? Good news, bad news?
Well, I think it definitely will make it easier for people to have guns to protect themselves. I mean, there are a number of states that have agreements among themselves for reciprocity. If you get a permit in one state, it'll be recognized. But it's a real hodgepodge right now. When you travel, you may end up going through some states that haven't yet worked out agreements with other states. And what's being asked is to make these rules similar to what you have with a driver's license. We don't expect individual states to go and work out agreements with each other on whether or not you can drive your car from one part of the country to another. Once you've met rules in that state to get the license, it's honored. Now, you still have to obey the different traffic rules. So, like in California, you can turn on red. In some states on the East Coast, you can't make a right turn on red. And so you'll still have to obey the individual state laws with regard to concealed carry.
This has still got a long way to go before it's law, right?
Oh, that's exactly right. I mean, last time, 2 years ago, it almost passed the Senate. You had 58 votes. You needed to get 60 to overcome the filibuster. But since then, Republicans have picked up 6 seats, and all those will end up voting for it, it appears. So they should have over the 60 votes. The problems are twofold. One is some of the Democrats who pushed for it last time want to push a different bill this time. And so whether they can make an agreement or not remains to be seen.
Okay.
And then the other problem is whether Obama would veto it, which would seem likely. And they'd have to have 2/3 votes in both houses to overcome that.
And they may not be able to garner those kind of votes. John, thank you so much. Rock and sea salt are no different from ordinary table salt, despite claims they are natural and more healthy, according to a couple consumer groups. The groups say they found no difference in the chemical content between regular salt and the costly gourmet brands. Manufacturers dispute the report, saying that it does not give the full picture. Listen to this. More than 1 in 4 American women took at least one drug for conditions like anxiety and depression last year. And the report by pharmacy benefits manager Medco found that the use of drugs for psychiatric and behavioral disorders in all adults rose 22% from 2001. The medications are most often prescribed to women aged 45 and older, but their use among younger men and in older adults climbed sharply as well. Dr. Peter Bregan with us. He's a Harvard-trained psychiatrist. Overprescription, Peter, isn't it?
Oh, it's enormously overprescription. You know, and my heart goes out to the women. I mean, 26% of American women on psychiatric drugs. The great majority are taking antidepressants. They may be taking other drugs as well, but most of this 26% are on antidepressants. A quarter of the women, 45 years and older, are on antidepressants.
That's amazing, Peter. So what do we do to try to get people off it?
Well, I think it's important to realize that this is not the result of an increased so-called mental illness. This is actually the result of disability being caused by the psychiatric drugs. We now know that when you take an antidepressant for more than a few months, the longer you take it, the harder it is to get off, and the more depressed you get, the more apathetic you get. You're better off taking a placebo than taking an antidepressant. The person who takes an antidepressant is going to have more recurrences of depression. These drugs are actually, George, they're actually hurting long-term the people who are taking them. And we have a lot of science on this. I review the science on, if I could mention, my Huffington Post.
Yeah, absolutely.
The last Huffington Post has the science behind what I'm saying about how the drugs are making people worse. We've got to tell people that the long-term use of psychiatric drugs is generally not good for their brain, their mind, or themselves.
So if you're with someone tonight, you're listening to this broadcast, Peter, and you have a loved one who's one of the four that is taking some kind of antipsychotic drug, what do you do? What do you do with that person?
Any psychiatric drug, in particular these antidepressants. Well, the first thing is not to believe that you need to be on psychiatric drugs all of your life. There are no all-of-your-life tests. Don't believe you have a biochemical imbalance. There are no tests for biochemical imbalance that have anything to do with psychiatry or taking psychiatric drugs. Try to find help with being depressed and anxious or being disturbed. There's all kinds of help out there. There's psychotherapists, there's family therapists, there's AA if it's a drug-related problem. I'd like to see more and more of the people with psychiatric drugs going into AA to get off the psychiatric drugs. Search for something more hopeful than this whole idea that you need to be taking drugs forever.
Okay, Peter.
So many are women is really distressing.
If you need the websites of any of our news guests, you can find them on our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. A new course has been launched in Britain to teach people how to survive a zombie invasion. Zombie Boot Camp. Cost $93, designed to train and prepare people for an uprising by the undead. Groups of 8 attending the one-day course will first be given training by expert military instructors. One of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes in season three, It's a Good Life. You might remember young Billy Mumy.
You're a bad man. You're a very bad man. And you keep thinking bad thoughts about me.
And he wishes them into the cornfield. Well, up next, Bill Mumy joins us. He's grown up. We're next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Knorr. You know, one of the treats I get doing Coast to Coast and sharing this with you, witnessing some people that we've all grown up with, people that we've watched on television or in the movies, and then you get to know them in their adult life, and it's just really, really cool. And it's really always my pleasure to bring Billy Mumy back to Coast. Billy, of course, multi-talented artist. You've seen him in films. You've seen him on television. He's everywhere. He has entered the arena of being an entertainer when he was five. He played, remember, Will Robinson in the long-running series Lost in Space, the Twilight Zone episodes as well. He's done all kinds of things. He's also a great musician. He's back here in the studio, Billy Mumy. Hey, Billy, how are you?
George, I'm good. I'm real good.
You look good.
It's always nice to be here on your show, man. Thanks for having me back.
I get such a kick every time I hear that little bad man clip.
I forget how high-pitched that tone is. It really cuts through your skull, doesn't it?
How many years was that?
50 years, last month.
Can you believe that?
I saw Cloris Leachman, who played my mother in that episode, and I saw her last week, and someone had posted on my website that it was the 50th anniversary of It's a Good Life's original airing, and we had a little giggle and a cry over that.
50 years?
Yeah, pretty weird, huh?
You look like you're 28.
Oh, thank you kindly.
How did this happen?
Yeah, it's cryogenics. I go and freeze myself every few decades for a while.
Billy, you're doing all kinds of things. I want to talk about your music career as well, but let's talk a little bit about sci-fi and nostalgia for a moment. People love these movies and these films and these TV shows from way gone back.
Well, I've been fortunate to be involved with a lot of projects that have resonated, you know, with the culture. Twilight Zone was such a brilliant series. So glad to be able to say I was part of three of the original episodes, a little thing in the feature film. I wrote one of the redos, you know, when they came back a few years ago. And my daughter and I did a sequel to It's a Good Life. It's still a good life.
That's
with
right.
Cloris Leachman about 5 years ago. So that was great. And Lost in Space has been running globally for 45 years now. And I never had a bad day on Lost in Space. And I got to do Babylon 5 for 5 years.
You had
in
fun
the 90s.
With that.
I didn't enjoy the physical transformation of becoming an alien from the planet Minbar every day for hours of gluing foam rubber to my head. But it was a really well-written show, very ambitious, and a lot of great people connected with that. A lot of other things. You know, I've written comic books that were sci-fi oriented, and it's an arena I really enjoy. And I'm so grateful here for your new book, Talking to the Dead. I look forward to reading it.
You'll have some fun with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the push for people who want to communicate with the other side.
I had a really cool dream about my father last night. He's been gone for 16 years, and he was absolutely vibrant in my dream last night. So, yeah.
He must have had a kick watching your career.
He seemed to be quite proud of my achievements. And, you know, when I was on location, my father was a cowboy and he didn't come to the studios here in town with me. My mom always came with me. But when I was doing westerns or on locations doing, you know, shoots out of town, he would come with me for a handful of days. When I was doing Bless the Beasts and Children, a Stanley Kramer film, we were in Catalina. Speaking, by the way, of Natalie Wood. I narrated that biography, her biography. Oh,
that's right, you did. Yeah.
He came out there for all the Buffalo stuff. And he was a great guy. He was a good guy, my dad.
Did you have to audition with other kids or did they just pick you and you went to the part?
Well, certainly in my early years, like 5 to 10, I auditioned for a lot of stuff. Plenty of stuff I didn't get and plenty of stuff I did. After about 10, things were pretty much offered to me. I didn't audition for Lost in Space. That was offered to me. And it was a good role there for another 7 or 8 years. Then I kind of faded away for a while.
What was it like in school for you? Did the other kids treat you well or were they jealous? How did they handle that?
You know, they grew up from kindergarten through, in terms of grammar school, you know, they grew up with me coming and going right from the very beginning. I lived on a little dead-end street in West L.A., and there were kids basically my age in almost every house. It was almost idyllic. I have no complaints about the way I grew up. Going back to school, to public school, after being gone for 4 years for Lost in Space, that was a little tough because, you know, first of all, middle school's tough for anybody.
Oh, it sure is.
Yeah, teenagers, that 14, 15, they're mean. And I guess I kind of walked that thin line of, you know, not wanting to be pushed around, but wanting to be nice and liked and not knowing if people liked me because I was kind of cool or if people liked me because I'd been on TV every week. And that was weird until I put a band together. And as soon as I put a band together, then, you know, everything was better.
How old were you when you did that?
14.
14 years old.
Yeah. We played at all those junior high school dances and quad appearances. And
what were your favorite groups growing up?
Well, when I was really young, the Kingston Trio made me want to play, you know, simple songs of harmony and stories that really had something to say besides just womp, womp, a loop, womp, a womp, bam, boom. But I liked that stuff, too. The Beach Boys were huge. You know, I loved Brian Wilson stuff and still do. Then the Beatles came along, and how can you, you know, not love that? But I liked the Birds and the Doors and all those. I saw all those bands, and as a kid, I was so fortunate to be able to go to all those gigs. I saw some really good gigs.
You know, music then was great because we grew up with it. You know, and I like it now. You know, I'm kind of one of those guys that, you know, I'm kind of hip. You know, and my kids tell me that. And
indeed, if you say so, dear boy.
It's right. I mean, I like it. I think Lady Gaga is a genius.
I like Lady Gaga.
I think she's a genius. You know, Katy Perry is great.
Yeah.
I mean, and all that. But I like the evolution. But there is something special about the artists from a few years ago. I mean, they had some magic about them. They had songs that, you know, you could understand. You know,
it's awfully hard to top, you know, the Beatles, the Beach Boys, Bob Dylan, the Stones, you know, Otis Redding. You look at that period in the 60s, it's really hard to not keep listening to that stuff fresh. You know, Jimi Hendrix still sounds real good.
Billy Gibbons tells us Jimi Hendrix was the best guitarist he had ever seen.
I saw Hendrix twice. Billy Gibbons is a tone monster, too. He's great.
He's good.
I love him.
He sure is. I ran into Jesse Dylan, the son of Bob Dylan,
and
he desperately wants to get Bob on the program.
Oh,
and
cool.
He says, George, he just doesn't do radio, but my mom listens to you all the time, and maybe we can talk him into it.
Well,
Bob, I'd love to get him on.
Yeah, his real theme time radio show. He, you know, which he was great. He did 100 of those, which was an inspiration to me. I did 101 hours of the real good radio hour.
Robert Zimmerman.
Yeah.
His real name.
Hibbing, Minnesota.
You've got a new CD out, don't you?
Brand new. Came out last Tuesday.
What's it called?
Until the Big Bang Whimpers.
Oh, really?
On GRA Records, yeah.
Well, you want to listen to a little bit of
it? I've heard it before, but I'd love to share a track with you and your listeners.
Which one do you want us to play?
Let's listen to... It's actually a concept record. It follows a character through a series of circumstances, emotional, financial, and spiritual, which hopefully some people can relate to. Let's listen to track 11, which is called Wrestling with Survival.
All right, we'll listen to this right up to the break. Here we go.
Thank you.
Okay, next hour, Cliff Pickover joins us. We're going to talk about some real science stories. When we come back, we're going to keep our chat going with Billy Moomy and also take your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie out here in Los Angeles. We're going to keep this show going for you tonight, even though outside there is a bomb scare with police officers cordoning off a 7-block area.
Yeah, danger, danger, Will
Robinson. You may be stuck in here with me all night, Moomy.
Camping out, George.
We're not going to leave.
Not a problem.
I'm supposed to be on a plane tomorrow going to St. Louis.
Yikes.
I may not get out of here.
Well, we'll just hope for the best, dear boy.
We'll keep you abreast of things. There are police lights out. I just took a look during the break. They're all over the place.
The trauma and the drama.
Here we are. I've got a special guest who wants to say hi to you.
Oh?
And there's a reason for that. Let's go to this special guest. Hello there.
Hello, Bill and George. It's Mark Zickrey. How are you tonight?
Oh, hi, Mark.
Wonderful. Mark, of course, wrote The Twilight Zone Companion.
A great book. A must-have.
He knows almost as much about the episodes as I bet Rod Serling did.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. He also wrote an episode of Babylon 5 or two. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah. We worked on some of the same shows together. That was great fun.
Always a treat.
Mark, I've got to tell you, it is a treat to watch Billy in all these programs that he has been in over the years, and then here he is in the flesh,
yeah,
doing what he does.
Well, it's just such great fun. I mean, Bill really was unique. I mean, there were many child actors back in the 50s and 60s, but he really stood out. He was just brilliant, and it was great to watch him grow up and become such a skilled adult actor as well. And it's always fun to cross paths. I always enjoy it.
We've done this show together too.
We have indeed.
Yeah, we've been in this very room together, but you weren't here, George.
That's right. I was back in St. Louis. Yeah. That's right.
That's right.
It's a neat room, though. It kind of got that flavor of the program.
Classic vibe, classic.
And by the way, did you see my earthquake detector behind you, Billy?
I actually have.
There it is.
Godfrey Daniels!
When an earthquake
hits, it's like Buckminster Fuller designed it.
It starts to move. It only moves when the building starts shaking. And it is shaken, Danny, what? Maybe twice in about 8 years.
Mm.
Not much.
Well, the curse of the movie. Let's hope it doesn't
start
strike with the cops outside and the bomb scare and everything else.
We've got a bomb scare going outside here, Mark.
My Lord. Well, it's definitely interesting times, guys. But but certainly you can't fault the company that we're in with each other.
Coast to coast here. Chaos Central tonight.
Hey, Mark, we're going to keep you around for some Twilight Zone questions along with Billy. Okay, we'll do that. And Billy, tell me a little bit more of your music. First of all, your CD. If people want to see you in action or get your CD, what do they do?
Well, right now we're starting the first video, which was the song we played earlier, Wrestling with Survival. But until that's cut and finished and edited, if they want to hear the record, they can go to Reverb Nation and listen to the record in its entirety. I call it a record still. That's old school. But you can buy it at Amazon.com. You can buy it at the GRAGroup.com. Or in a couple of weeks, it'll be up on iTunes. It's really fresh. It's only been out like a week. Yeah.
And do you play the...
I play everything on
everything.
The album.
You do it all.
It's a solo record in the truest sense of the word. I have a really nice studio in my house, and everything's... A lot of instruments. Everything's set up and pre-mic'd,
cool.
And I cast myself as the drummer and the bass player and the keyboard players, et cetera. And, I hear the parts in my head, and I, for better or worse, I'm the only guy...
The drummer is Anthony Fremont.
That's right. The guitars are by Will Robinson.
That's right.
And we got Lanier from the Planet Minbar on bass.
Let's go to some of the phones. Let's go to Hackstown, New Jersey. David, you're with us on Coast to Coast. You're on with Billy Mumy. Mark Zakri with us, too. Go ahead, David.
Hello, Billy Mumy. You were on my radio show in Hackstown, New Jersey, right before Lost in Space, the movie, came out.
Wow.
Of course I was.
Do you remember that?
Oh, absolutely. It's clear as a bell right now. How could I ever possibly forget that, Dave?
Billy, I am honored. You, when I was a kid, I wanted to be you so bad. I wanted to be on the deck of the Jupiter 2 so bad.
Okay.
And I'm 52 years old, and I still want to be on the deck of the Jupiter 2.
You're scaring me a little, Dave.
Listen, I found on the internet you can buy Lost in Space robot for $10,000.
What a deal. It took Bobby May 3 seasons to make that much.
Yeah. But it's cool because you get all kinds of good stuff.
If I had one, I would turn it into an MP3 player.
Well, listen, the only thing I didn't like about Lost in Space, the movie, is they didn't have the original Jupiter 2. They made it the Gemini 3 or whatever. And I thought the Jupiter 2 was it has to be the Jupiter 2 all the way through.
Oh, they made a Lost in Space movie, did they? Oh, the pain. The pain.
Yes, the pain. Oh, my delicate back.
Oh, dear. He was great.
Good talking to you, Bill Mumy.
Thanks, you, Dave.
Later, buddy.
Great. What did you enjoy more, Twilight Zone or Lost in Space? Where did you have the most fun?
Oh, Lost in Space was my family. It was my base. I was there for almost 4 years every day. So, I mean, you can't compare that experience with a group of people that you're with every day from the age of, I was 10 when we shot the pilot and 14 when we went off the air. So that's my family. That's my roots. I loved working on the Twilight Zones, and I loved working with Cloris, who I've worked with 4 times. But, you know, those were 3 or 4 days. You're on a show for maybe 5 days at the most, and then you're on to something else with a whole other crew and a whole other cast. So as much as the Twilight Zones have held up, artistically speaking, maybe better than anything else, I'd have to say my heart goes out to those years on Lost in Space.
Super. Mark, you have remastered all the Twilight Zones. They look great.
That's right, George. And all five seasons are out, including season five, which has the voiceovers, the commentaries that you and I did. So that's great fun. And but I grew up in the 60s and watched all these great shows. And in fact, right now I'm actually rebooting a very famous science fiction show. I'll be able to announce that shortly. But it's, I'm a huge devotee of 1950s and 60s science fiction TV, and Twilight Zone was great, and Lost in Space was great. I'm every bit as much a fan of that show as anyone calling in.
Your nose is growing, Mark. maybe the first 16 or 17 episodes.
Well, that pilot is fascinating. If no one's ever seen both versions of the pilot, it's really an education in how to do television. It's fascinating. The first one without the robot, without Dr. Smith, and then the revised version. Very interesting.
Yeah, it was the most expensive pilot ever filmed up to that point in time.
Wow.
Tell us about the robot, Billy.
What a great prop. It was designed by George Kinoshita, who also designed Robbie the Robot for Forbidden Planet.
Okay. Because there's similarities.
Yeah.
They're rounded.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. The bubbles on the top and the neon that lights up when they speak, the claw-like arms. Brilliant design. I don't think you can improve on it. If you're going to put a guy in a suit, that's a really good one. And, of course, Bob May, who was inside it, and memorized all the dialogue, really brought that prop to life. And then his dialogue was re-recorded by Dick Tufeld, a wonderful voiceover artist and a cool jazzy cat who was good friends with Miles Davis.
How long did the guy have to stay in there?
He loved being in there. He would be happy as a clam to have been in that robot for 10 hours a day.
You didn't get claustrophobic,
No,
huh?
He loved it. He absolutely loved being inside.
What if he
there?
Had to go to the bathroom or something?
Well, then he got out. They
Is it easy to get in and out of the thing?
He was a young man at the time. He was in his 20s,
How do you get in it?
The head, the bubble thing popped off. That was one section. And then he would pull his arms in and lock those arms into place. And then the special effects guys would, Stu Moody and Paul Skelton, Red Skelton's brother, would unbolt the torso section and pull it over his head, and he'd just hop out.
Was there a smoking cigar with a robot?
There is a story. You want to hear that?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we used to tease Bobby all the time because he was so passionate about being in the robot. And one day, Mark Goddard, who played Major West, he and I told the special effects guys that when we break for lunch, we'll let Bobby out of the robot. You guys just go ahead and break early. We'll let him out. So everybody left Stage 11 at 20th Century Fox and went off to the commissary for lunch. And we left Bobby all alone in the middle of this sand set, out there alone. He didn't even realize what was going on. We started to walk to the commissary and leave him alone in there, and we both looked at each other like, come on, we can't really leave him in there. So we went back to the soundstage, and the soundstages at Fox, they're huge. They're like aircraft hangars. So we walk into the stage, and they're 50 yards or so in front of us on the set. There's the robot, and smoke is coming out of the robot. Uh-huh. And I start to panic. I think, oh my God,
right?
There's so many wires and things in that thing that literally a wire could have fallen down and short-circuited and singed his hair, and he couldn't have,
And like, he's dying inside.
Oh my God, he's a crispy critter in there, barbecued inside the robot. So we rush over and we undo the robot top, and this is the truth. It's not an exaggeration. Bobby's in there. He's got a cigarette in his mouth. He's holding a pen light up by his chin in a little, and he's got the trades, the variety. He's got the variety down there, and he's got smoking a cigarette, little flashlight, reading the trades, happy as a clam.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, he was one of a kind guy.
Everybody was panicky.
Yeah.
Let's go to Danny in Citrus Heights, California, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Danny.
Hello, George. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
That's good. I just have a two-part question. The first part is for you, and the other is for Billy. But the first part is, how's your father doing? And could you please tell him thank you for serving? For Buster, I couldn't get in to, say thanks for, the men and the women that served, so we could have the freedoms that we are enjoying.
Okay. Well, and, your father passed away.
My dad didn't. My dad wasn't in the service, but. Maybe yours was, George.
Yeah, mine was.
I think he's talking.
Yeah, that's okay. I was meaning George's.
Because you're breaking up a little bit. Yeah, he's okay. He's 88. He's like a rubber ball, but he's holding on.
Well, that's good. Yeah, and also Billy, one question that I have for you, I'm kind of nervous right now, but
I was wondering, did you ever get, like, nervous? I mean, because I remember, like, Ricky Nelson was talking about how when they were doing the Ozzy and Harry show, how he'd always have his scripts kind of, like, on notes on his, you know, like, on the back of his hand or whatever, and Ozzy would be telling David, you know, because he was trying to memorize them, and mm-hmm. he was telling him, you know, this is costing us money. We're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to memorize it. And so do you ever still get butterflies in your stomach? I mean,
you know, honestly, I did 3 episodes of The Adventures in Ozzy and Harriet, and I loved being a part of that, and I especially loved seeing Rick and his band lip sync to
great those. Family.
Yeah, James Burton playing that Telecaster was so great. I don't want to sound cocky in this answer, but you know what? Memorizing dialogue has always been really, really, really easy to me. And, you know, just kind of hitting my mark and believing what I was saying. I don't get nervous when I'm working. I will say that I get nervous and butterflies in an audition situation. You know, when you're walking into an office and there's all these people there judging you, and you kind of, there's 5 other guys in khaki pants and a blue shirt waiting to go in and do the same thing. That's not the most comfortable situation to be in, the audition thing. But as far as when you're actually working, that's always been a lot of fun. The work is fun for me.
Mark, why still the fascination with the Twilight Zone? I mean, no matter where you go, people remember it. People talk about it.
Well, I think Bill gave a great answer. He said they really hold up. I mean, they're terrific. They're, if you watch It's a Good Life or In Praise of Pip or Long Distance Call, those are the 3 episodes that the Bill was in, and they're all brilliantly written, brilliantly performed, brilliantly directed, great music. It was the most talented people working in television at that time collaborated on Twilight Zone. I mean, Bernard Herrmann, who did the score for Citizen Kane and Psycho and Taxi Driver, he was composing music for Twilight Zone. And you know, it's interesting because Bill was on Twilight Zone before Lost in Space, and yet, you know, the casting people were terrific on Twilight Zone. They really recognized talent, and they said, well, here's a kid who can really deliver. And my God, if you watch him and Jack Klugman in Praise of Pip, that's just, I think that's really about the best the television can do, period.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. And you know, also, The Twilight Zone, by not having a set cast every week, it was a new cast.
That's right.
People didn't rest on their laurels or get cocky,
No. You
know, and that happens during successful television shows. A lot of, unfortunately, a lot of actors tend to get a little, you know, full of themselves. Also, and I don't think we could have this in today's television business, but, you know, Twilight Zone was truly the work of a visionary and a single force. Rod Serling's, I don't have to tell you, but Rod Serling's work is so instantly recognizable. There's the iambic pentameter to the way he wrote dialogue is just, you know, as familiar as Bob Dylan's voice to us. And of course, Buck Houghton was a producer who really protected him.
Yeah.
And you look at the early episodes, and there's 2 producers and 1 writer.
Yeah.
You know, you look at shows today.
They've got an
there's,
army.
There's
right?
14 producers.
Yeah.
And you just, too many cooks spoil the stew. But I think so much of the credit goes to Rod Serling.
And people worked. They worked hard then, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing when you realize these episodes, as Bill said, they were shot in 3 days. And that's just phenomenal. And to do something, you know, that you shoot in 3 days, and here we are, you know, 50 years later, still talking about it, is a testament to great work. But then it inspires all of us. I certainly know that it's inspired me in the television that I've written, and Joe Straczynski, who created Babylon 5. Rod was a big inspiration on him, and J.J. Abrams as well. He's another person that I know well. And when we get together, those of us who create television, we talk about Serling. We talk about The Twilight Zone. It's what inspired us, and it's the high watermark. We go back and watch those shows now when we want to be re-inspired. And certainly Guillermo del Toro. I'm doing a book with Guillermo, and we talk about Rod. And so it just continues.
Also, you know, if you look at the people, the character actors that weren't necessarily the lead stars in every Twilight Zone episode, but the ones who filled out those casts,
They're
quirky, wonderful character actors. And in today's world, the networks want Ken and Barbies everywhere.
Everywhere.
Right.
They
everywhere.
Really want these just beautiful faces and model bodies everywhere you look.
Yeah.
And you don't get that in the classic 50s and 60s episodes. You really get good character actors.
Why do they want that, though, Bill? Is it sell?
I don't know why they do what they do.
It's just strange, unworkable plan that they have in network television now. But again, when you're talking about, if you look at an episode like It's a Good Life, what a phenomenal ensemble. I mean, you're the star of that episode, but there's Cloris Leachman, there's John Larch. I mean, just an amazing ensemble.
Oh, yeah. Max Showalter. I mean, all of those episodes were really filled out with terrific actors I salute wholeheartedly.
The scary part of that one for me was when you turned the guy into a jack in the box.
Yeah.
And you saw the shadow of the head going.
That's the other thing about the Twilight Zones. You know, they implied their effects. Now, certainly that was because of budget but it was such a good choice.
Yeah.
They could have had really cheesy effects and it would have dated the show terribly. If you looked at it now and it was just a bad, jack-o'-lantern head, you'd go, oh, please, you'd laugh.
Yeah.
Whereas all you see is the shadow.
It was scary.
And it leaves it up to the viewer's imaginations to take.
I actually.
Great choice.
Didn't like you when you were a little kid. When
That's
I saw
okay,
that.
George. You get a get out of the cornfield free card.
But I like you now. You're a good guy.
Back
almost out of time here. Let's take another call. Let's go to James in East Moline, Illinois. Hey, go ahead, James.
Thanks, George, sure. And again, a pleasure. And Mr. Mumy, Mr. Zikri, definitely thank you for all your work on Twilight Zone. My question for Mr. Mumy, what was the strangest role you ever played as a child or as an adult?
Oh, boy, that's really a hard question because, let's see, they turned me into a monkey on The Munsters. They made me green on, probably being transformed into the spitting image of Dr. Smith. On an episode of Lost in Space was probably the strangest because Johnny Chambers and all those great makeup men at Fox that were working on Planet of the Apes at that particular time spent hours doing face casts of Jonathan and myself and sizing it down and turning Will Robinson into a complete duplicate of Dr. Smith. And I've seen some photos of it not too long ago, and it was really brilliantly done. So maybe off the top of my head, I'd have to say at the age of 12, transforming into a 50-something-year-old convincingly was also playing Darren Stevens. That's a good Trivial Pursuit. Name the three actors who played Darren Stevens, Dick Sargent, Dick York, and Billy Mumy.
I love it. Well, Billy, look, we're out of time.
Okay, we're out of time.
Your website, of course, is?
Catchy, BillMumy.com.
MUMY. If for some reason you can't get out of the building because of this,
can I stay?
Cordon off bump. Come on back in.
Yeah, I'll be happy
and,
to chat.
You know, you can chat with Cliff Pickover about the physics book and have some fun.
Yeah, if I can't get back.
I don't want you just waiting in your car until they give us an all clear.
Lost in Sherman Oaks.
You may be trapped. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Thank you, Mark.
Good to see you, George.